tonight of Revelation 18. Let me go ahead and read those verses. And the kings of the earth who committed acts of immorality and lived sensuously with her, that is, with the great harlot Babylon, will weep and lament over her when they see the smoke of her burning, standing at a distance because of the fear of her torment, saying, "Woe, woe, the great city Babylon, the strong city, for in one hour your judgment has come." And the merchants of the earth weep and mourn over her, because no one buys their cargoes anymore, cargoes of gold and silver and precious stones and pearls and fine linen and purple and silk and scarlet and every kind of citron wood and every article of ivory and every article made from very costly wood and bronze and iron and marble and cinnamon and spice and incense and perfume and frankincense and wine and olive oil and fine flour and wheat and cattle and sheep and cargoes of horses and chariots and slaves and human lives. And the fruit you long for has gone from you, and all things that were luxurious and splendid have passed away from you, and men will no longer find them. The merchants of these things who became rich from her will stand at a distance because of the fear of her torment, weeping and mourning, saying, "Woe, woe, the great city, she who was clothed in fine linen and purple and scarlet, and adorned with gold and precious stones and pearls, for in one hour such great wealth has been laid waste. And every shipmaster and every passenger and sailor, and as many as make their living by the sea, stood at a distance and were crying out as they saw the smoke of her burning, saying, 'What city is like the great city?' And they threw dust on their heads and were crying out, weeping and mourning, saying, 'Woe, woe, the great city, in which all who had ships at sea became rich by her wealth, for in one hour she has been laid waste.'" Well, as we've been seeing in Revelation 17 and 18, it's been the discussion of the great harlot, this Babylon, the mother of harlots, and of the abominations of the earth. And we've seen this is this world system, religious, economic, it's a world system in which man is ultimate. Man is at the center of everything. Man's self-interest is what controls and dominates everything. And this is the system which the believers were told, as we saw last time in 18:4, that they are to come out of her, my people. That is, the people that belong to God, that you may not participate in her sins, and that you may not receive of her plagues. Because it's impossible to be involved in, enjoined and assimilate in, and be syncretistic with a world system and not receive its judgments. And so the call is to come out. Come out. And this has been the call all through the history of God's people. Israel was a called out, chosen people, separate, set apart. They were supposed to be distinct from all the other nations around them, but yet they wanted a king so they could be like all the other nations. They were always wanting to try to assimilate and with the other pagan cultures around them, adopt their ways and practices. When they were called to be separate and distinct, this was the call to the church. We've been called out of the world. And Paul told in 2 Corinthians 6:14 that what does a believer have in common with an unbeliever? That we're to come out from them. And this has always been indicative of God's people. They've been people who have come out from the world and have separated themselves from the world and its system. Well, so far the world has been living in luxury as a result of this system. The merchants of the earth, the kings of the earth, have grown wealthy and fat and rich and prosperous all through this world system. But all that's coming to an end. All that's going to come crashing down. And here we see in this the destruction of Babylon, of this system. And we see three groups here that are mourning. There's the kings, there's the merchants, and then there's the people of the sea. And these are the ones who are most affected by the destruction of this world system. And their laments and their reaction to this fall of Babylon, this destruction of this system. And all of it is based on the coming apart of their own self-interest. All their self-interest, everything is tied up in this system. When that system collapses, they have nothing left. All their hopes, everything has been tied to it. And so, each one's response is similar. The kings, the merchants, it's all woe, woe, woe. They're in great mourning over this because their self-interests are adversely affected. They just come crashing down. Now, these same three groups are found over in Ezekiel chapter 26 through 28. Of course, I'm not going to read all two chapters, but in the judgments that are predicted here on the nations in these two chapters, it's the destruction of Tyre and judgment on Sidon, and also judgment, again, primarily on Tyre. It's these same groups that are affected by it. And we see there's the kings of the earth. These are the same kings that are mentioned over in verse 3 of chapter 18. For all the nations have drunk of the wine of the passion of her immorality, and the kings of the earth have committed acts of immorality with her, and the merchants of the earth have become rich by the wealth of her sensuality. And so there's just been this idolatrous worship of this man-centered system that promotes man's self-interest over and above everything else. Now, these kings are separate and distinct from the 10 kings who actually bring down the harlot and her system because it becomes a threat to the Antichrist to whom they are in allegiance with. But these are the other kings of the earth whose self-interest, their self-interest is not tied up so much in the Antichrist like the 10 kings. Their self-interest is all tied up in the harlot, in this system, in this world system. And so you have the first group, the kings of the earth. And the way they are described in verses 9 through 10, the verb tenses that are used here are future tense. They live sensuously with her. They will weep and lament over her when they see the smoke of her burning. And so the verb tenses are future tense, looking for something that's going to take place in the future. And here the kings, as we saw over in verse 3, the kings of the earth committed acts of immorality with her. Here the kings committed acts of immorality and lived sensuously with her. And so the immorality leads to this sensual lifestyle, just this life of self-indulgence, sensual self-indulgence. And it's this spiritual adultery, idolatry, sensual living, all go hand in hand. And of course, their reaction to the destruction, when they see the smoke of her burning, this destruction of Babylonian system, their reaction is to weep and mourn and lament. There'll be weep and lament. And the words mean kind of an open crying and a sobbing. And really, and the word lament has the idea of to beat or to cut or to slash. It's this loud, noisy wailing. They're just devastated by what has been taking place. It's just a picture of intense sorrow, intense agony, overwhelming grief. Well, why are they this way? Because they see the smoke of her burning. And they're standing at a distance because of the fear of her torment. They don't want to get too close. In other words, even though they're this loud weeping and wailing over the destruction of the system, they don't want to get too close to it to come underneath, to be caught up in that destruction themselves. But it's a futile attempt, because God had already told His people to come out from among her, that you may not participate in her sins, you may not receive of her plagues. They're not going to escape it, even though they try to stand off from it. But even more than the loss of the city that they're lamenting, it's what the city represents: the power, the wealth, the security, the status, the luxury, the self-gratification. All of this is gone. And even goes deeper than that, over just the loss of all their temporal goods. They're going to have an awakened knowledge of God and a realization of the consequences of ungodliness, of self-gratification, self-worship, self-indulgence, self-centeredness. It's this realization that they've had a false security and misplaced values. Remember, Jesus warned over in Luke chapter 23, verse 27. So they were following Him, a great multitude of the people and of women who were mourning and lamenting Him. In the same words, just this mourning, wailing, lamenting. And what did Jesus say? Daughters of Jerusalem, stop weeping for me, but weep for yourselves and for your children. For behold, the days are coming when they will say, blessed are the barren, and the wombs that never bore, and the breasts that never nursed. Then they will begin to say to the mountains, fall on us, and to the hills, cover us. For if they do these things in the green tree, what will happen in the dry? They do these things when the Son of Man is among them. What are they going to do when in times of apostasy? When there's no restraint? And so they have misplaced their love of the world. Everything's tied up in the world, and all that's going to be gone. And so they see the smoke of her burning. And again, this recalls the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. Remember what Peter said in his epistle, 2 Peter chapter 3, verse 10 and 11, concerning the coming of the day of the Lord. It said, but the day of the Lord will come like a thief, in which the heavens will pass away with a roar, and the elements will be destroyed with intense heat, and the earth and its works will be burned up. Since all these things are to be destroyed in this way, what sort of people ought you to be in holy conduct and godliness, looking for and hastening the coming of the day of the Lord? So, and he says, but according to His promise, we are looking for new heavens and new earth. In other words, don't let your hope, don't get tied up in this world, don't depend on this world, don't look for your security and your hope in this world or the things in this world, because all this is going to get burned up. And so they are in this great lamenting. And the reason for it is that they have their loss of their political power, because a great part of a ruler, king, political power consists in wealth and being able to wield that wealth and being able to use it as a tool to coerce people to do things. Just think in this nation how much we have other countries do or capitulate to simply by saying, we're going to withhold foreign aid. We're not going to invest in your country. We're not going to ship things. We're going to create an embargo against you. And so the wealth and the goods become a tool and a weapon to get other nations to capitulate, and a weapon which they wield their power with. And so they're in this intense woe. Woe, woe, the great city Babylon, the strong city. For in 1 hour your judgment is come. And again, the 1 hour doesn't refer so much to a period of time as it does it's going to happen quick. It's going to happen quickly. It's going to be, when they're saying peace and safety, then destruction will come upon them suddenly. everything's just going to be gone in such a short period of time. You know, we think of the time in the Depression when whole fortunes were just wiped out overnight because of the collapse of the system. And that's what we'll be seeing. It will be this total collapse which will wipe out kingdoms, powers, rulers, fortunes, everything. It's just going to be gone. And it says that they're standing at a distance because of the fear of the torment. The word torment, it's derived from the root word to test, like to test metal, to see, or to test a coin to see if it's genuine. You know, sometimes you see in some old movies, somebody gets a gold coin, they bite it to see if it's real, if it's soft gold or versus fool's gold or something. But this is a test. And then it also came to mean to torture. So this is a torturous torment. These people are in agony. And they're in fear that they may suffer the same fate. And so they stand at a distance and make no attempt to save the city. They're just trying to escape with their lives. Just like Lot, when he had to flee Sodom, they left with nothing. And so, then we come to the second group in verse 11. The merchants of the earth weep and mourn over her. Why? Because no one buys their cargoes anymore, because nobody has anything to buy them with. It's all gone. It's all been wiped out. Here it shifts to the present tense. Go from the future tense to the present tense with the merchants. And they're going to be weeping and mourning, the same response. They're just devastated by the loss of their income. They're devastated by the loss of their most lucrative and powerful customer and profitable customer. This system that generated, I mean, just think, all the commerce today, how much of it is based on self-gratification? You deserve it today. You deserve this. You deserve that. And it's all based on self-gratification. It's not so much, here's something that will make your life easier. This will be a time-saving device. This will make it your life easier to do your job or your task. No, it's all luxury, self-indulgence, ostentatious. And so these merchants are, none of that's left. It's gone. Now the cargo that John mentions here, these cargoes of gold, silver, precious stones, all these things that he's mentioning, the cargo of merchandise, consists of things from John's time that would have been luxury items. There were things that the wealthy, and even the extremely wealthy, would have been indulged themselves with and not denied themselves anything. And so these are things that John is speaking of that were the height of luxury for his time, not necessarily for the time of the fulfillment of the prophecy. The main point is that all items are indicative of luxurious and splendid living, just self-indulgence to the max. We watched a documentary a couple of weeks ago on a ancient Roman city. It's now, a lot of it's underwater. But at time of Nero, this was like the ultimate luxury resort for the elite of Rome. And they spared themselves no indulgence. They had all this great ostentatious wealth, and they displayed it. Magnificent tapestries, paintings of some of the most costly cloth, colors. You know, some colors in the ancient world were highly expensive because of what it took to produce those colors. And so here you have all these items that are indicative of just extreme luxury, a luxurious lifestyle. There used to be that show, right, Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous, where you would see just how these people lived in this ostentatious way. Here's all that stuff that allowed them to live that lifestyle. And it's these things that keep people from seeing this world and its system in its true colors. When people are living in this way, when people are seeking their health, are seeking their happiness and their contentment in the things of this world, and they keep accumulating and living more and more luxuriously. I mean, we live in an area of the country right here where we live where they are building houses just all around us, houses that start at $600,000, $700,000. And these are subdivisions full of these hundreds of houses. And it's just incredible the ostentatiousness that goes into a lot of these things. And when people gravitate to this sort of thing, it blinds them to the world and to its system and to its true colors. And that's what everything becomes wrapped up in. And so when they are faced with losing all that, then they just don't know what to do. They just come apart at the seams. And that's what's happening here. Many of these luxurious items are listed in Ezekiel and Tyre's destruction. There's 28 or 29 items here. And what's just a point of grammar that's somewhat interesting, the word "and" that follows all these cargoes of gold and silver and precious stones and pearls and fine linen, you have a string of 28 uses of the word "chi," the Greek word for "and" or "even," more than in any other known piece of literature. Not just the Bible, but any known piece of literature. The longest string of "ands" in any known literature. And so you have all these things that are gone. And we can kind of break them into seven categories. Things that the world pursues and are willing to sell their soul for. And we see first there's precious metals and jewels. Gold, silver, precious stones and pearls. Just all whether it's money, jewels, just this display of it, to have it. Then there's the luxurious, costly fabrics, fine linen and purple and silk and scarlet. These are things, purple and scarlet were two of the most expensive colors you could get. Purple was made from a shellfish, and it took a great deal of them and a lot of work to get a purple dye. And so these were extremely luxurious. Only the wealthy of the wealthiest could afford these things. And then there's expensive and ornate furniture. Every kind of citron wood, every article of ivory, and every article made from very costly wood and bronze and iron and marble. So you have very expensive ornate furniture. Then, you know, this wasn't pressboard stuff with fake laminate on it. This was high dollar, very costly wood and fixtures, ivory. Then there's spices, the choice spices and fragrances. Spice, incense, perfume, frankincense. Then you had choice foods, wine, olive oil, fine flour, wheat. Then you had agricultural animals, as well as transportation animals, cattle and sheep, cargoes of horses, chariots. These were four-wheeled type chariots. meant for conveying the wealthiest of the wealthy around him. These would have been like the Rolls Royces. And slaves in human lives, just the exploitation and traffic in human lives. Now, these items, again, are the things that the wealthy would have had. Extremely wealthy. Things that only the wealthy could have. So all these are gone. They can't sell them anymore. No one buys their cargoes anymore. The things themselves aren't gone, but nobody can buy them because nobody has the wherewithal to buy them with. They're just gone. And then in verse 14, the fruit you long for is gone from you. The word fruit there literally means ripe summer fruit. It's the only time the word is used in the New Testament. This choice, ripe fruit that you long for, all the wealth that would have accumulated to you from selling these things has gone from you. All things that were luxurious and splendid are passed away from you, and men will no longer find them. That word luxurious, all things that were luxurious, it literally means oily, fatty. These are just sumptuous, extravagant foods. And all that is splendid literally means shining or bright or radiant. This would have just been luxurious, elegant clothing. It's no longer, and the word no longer, oume, it's the strongest negation possible in the Greek. You will never, ever, ever find them again. They're gone for good. This is not just a temporary economic downturn. This is gone for good. And they're going to long for. The fruit you long for, it's a passionate longing and lust and desire. See, when the system collapses, everybody whose lives that depended upon this system, who benefited, who profited from, who indulged in, their lives are just going to be devastated. They won't know how to function. And that's the vast majority of this nation today. This nation could never tolerate and would never tolerate another depression. It would be absolute anarchy, especially in a society that has been taught to have an entitlement mentality for the most part, and that they deserve a certain standard of living. And so all these things they long for are going to be gone, never to come back. And even the merchants, like the kings, verse 15, the merchants of these things who became rich from her will stand at a distance because of the fear of her torment, the same as the kings, weeping and mourning. Again, it's self-preservation. And it's woe, woe, the great city. She who was clothed in fine linen and purple and scarlet, all the things that they were selling, all the products of this system, it's gone. The destruction is evaluated in terms of their self-interest. Everything their self-interest depended upon in this world is gone. In verse 17, for in 1 hour such great wealth has been laid waste. In just this short amount of time, they've lost their source of wealth, their source of income. Everything is gone. And these are the those in the ships, the third group, those who are transporting all this. So you had the kings who were living sensually from the things. You had the merchants who were getting rich by selling it. And you had the shipmasters who were getting rich by transporting it. So you have every level of the economics. You have the consumer, the kings. You have the merchants who are selling it. And you have those who are transporting the goods. Every bit of it's going to be gone. You can see the ripple effect that would have on a society, and how this economic collapse would have on society. When the kings no longer have the means to buy them with, the merchants can't sell them, there's no demand for them because nobody has anything to buy them with, so therefore there's no need to ship anything, and so everything just starts coming apart. Everything, there's no need to manufacture them. The manufacturer's obviously going to be out of business as well too. So everything is dependent upon this world system will just come crumbling down. In verse 18, they were crying out as they saw the smoke of her burning, saying, "What city is like the great city?" They threw dust on their heads and were crying out, weeping and mourning, saying, "Woe, woe, the great city in which all who had ships at sea became rich by her wealth, for in 1 hour she's been laid waste." Everything. So this is a tragic end of people who are willing to lose their soul to gain the world, whose self-interests are tied up in this world, in the things of this world, in the system of this world. And that's why when even we see the professing church today, where their self-interest is so tied to the things of this world, to the world's entertainment, to the world's value system, to the values and thinking and reasoning, whether it's secular psychology, whether it's evolutionary thought, whatever it is, whether it's some system of religion that, like Roman Catholicism, that people's self-interest are so tied up in, but yet are really the systems of this world. You got to come out of them, because all of it's going to come crashing down. And it will either come crashing down in reality, such as it's described here, or it will come crashing down when they die and hear, "Lord, Lord, didn't we do all this wonderful stuff in your name? Depart from me, I never knew you, you who practice lawlessness." It will all come crashing down. See, this is the world system versus the Christians who are called to come out from her. Christians who are willing to lose the world, their wealth, their status, their reputation, their power, their prestige, to gain Christ, to die to self, self-interest, versus living for self and self-interest. Those are the only two systems. And the one that's based on man and gratification of man is always going to disappoint. It will always fail, and it will always come crashing down, leaving those who have depended upon and trusted in it empty and barren with nothing. But woe, woe, woe. Oh, any comments?